many years ago now. Gosh, it's been 9 years since we moved to California. Can you believe it? Yeah. So Brentley and I started out in Santa Barbara. I remember distinctly, I was, for some reason, I don't remember where I was, but I was traveling, and she called me. She said, "Oh, I think I found my thing, outrigger canoeing." And I said, "Oh, cool, I'll go with you to the, you know, the orientation meeting and support you in this." And I was like signed up by like, you know, 10 minutes in. So we joined the Outrigger Canoe Team in Santa Barbara. And it was so much fun. And because of it, it just sort of opened up our world as new people, you know, as a new place for us. And one day we got invited to a very special outrigger canoeing adventure out on the ocean during a moon eclipse. Yeah, right. So the man who owned the boat was sort of a rough-hewn seaman, you know? You have the kind of the idea of what he was like. And he carried this kind of wisdom and wisdom of the sea, but also just general wisdom. And he was saying, as we were preparing the boat and getting ready to go out, he said, you know, back in the day when an eclipse would occur, human beings would throw rocks at it, right? Because they were afraid, right? The light, whatever that is that's in the way of our light, we don't want the light to go away. So they were throwing rocks at it. They were so afraid, right? And of course, over the years, we've realized that it's going to come back. But there still was fear present for all of us as we were, you know, getting ready to shove off into the dark night, onto the deep ocean. And so there was a recognition that there was still some kind of fear present. And the leader assured everyone that a little fear of the ocean was a healthy thing. And so as we got out there, and it was indeed dark, and as the eclipse happened, it was like black smoke over the moon. Yeah, it was very mystical. It was a very mystical feel. And then there was just silence and quiet and dark, right? The slow sound of the lapping water. And then something very magical happened. As we began to move our paddles in the water, it lit up all around us. The man behind me, BD, was telling me that that's phosphorescence, or also known as bioluminescence. There are little microorganisms in the right configuration that begin to sort of collide with one another and illumine the ocean. It was so amazing. I'd never experienced anything like that. It looks something like this, actually. And so that experience reminded me that beauty emerges out of darkness. Astounding, magical, mystical beauty, the kind of beauty that isn't the same if we're just sort of la-la living in it all the time. You know what I'm saying? It's that sort of deep appreciation and surprise, you know, that suddenly comes forth. And so in times like these, when things might feel dark or we might find ourselves going into those darker spaces in our psyches, in our beings, we can remind ourselves that even in the dark, there is light. And when it comes forth, it is something of a mystical, magical, delightful beauty. We are in the process of stirring those dark waters. And just as Sharon so beautifully brought forth in this creation story that she just shared with us, just as in the creation story itself, right? The creator says that, in the Genesis story anyway, that over the face of the waters of the deep, you imagine the dark waters, right? Out of that, all of creation emerged. All of this beauty, all of this form, all of this diversity of life. Magnificence out of darkness, out of the deep, dark waters. And so to know that in this sixth of our series, Peaceful Mind, Peaceful World, what we're really lighting up today is the idea of the path of the illumined soul, how we allow ourselves to become more of that light, to be more of that light, and to really walk the path of an illumined soul. And so all of us have moments in our lives, right, when we feel more illumined and other times when we maybe feel a little eclipsed, if you will. And so we're going to talk about some of those aspects that help us stay in that space. But first, to think about some of the folks that we really imagine to have experienced enlightenment, so to speak, or be illumined souls that have walked the earth that really have not forgotten as much as they've remembered who they are, you know, who really carried that light. And you think about how they lived on this earth, because part of the earth's design is that it is a place of contrast, right? This is earth school. We come from the light, as the light, into a place of contrast. It's by design. It's part of our process of learning and growing and evolving. And so in this place, there is light and dark. There is masculine and feminine energy. There are all the different what seems like maybe opposition, opposing aspects that come together as one. And so it is out of, if you think of some of the folks, the luminaries that we might think of, especially during this season of Lent, think of Jesus, right? The trials that he went through, the crucifixion even that he experienced, and what came out of that incredible darkness and even death? Resurrection, new life, a breakthrough of consciousness for humanity. Or for someone like Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr., who experienced all that darkness of violence and oppression, and on behalf of their people, they held the torch of the light. They found the light within themselves, and they continued on bravely shining it, right? It took the darkness to light that lamp and to carry it forward and to spread the light. And what came out of those times for India, a complete win of liberation from Britain, unheard of. And out of the civil rights movement, progress, right? Progress for African Americans, progress for many other groups of people because of that civil rights movement that Martin Luther King led for us, that light that he lit in the darkness. And while we're not there yet, we haven't arrived in the fullness of that luminary consciousness for all, we're on the journey, aren't we? And on the journey, it's important, I think, to recognize, and the illumined soul knows, that you need the dark in order to really fan out the light, expand the light, really light up that inner torch. So our souls can become illumined like that bioluminescent ocean by our conscious engagement in the fullness of life, by allowing, by engaging, by being with whatever comes our way, by beholding what comes to the world, and just paddling through, right? Just keep paddling through. We keep moving forward. We keep shining that light and opening space for the light to come around us and from within us. So a full moon eclipse blocks the light completely, right? Just like a full sun eclipse does. And Lisa was pointing out to me earlier that a moon eclipse is when the earth is the one causing the blockage, right? So just something to keep in mind, right? So there's free will in all of this. But so when that eclipse occurs, there is no light. But we all know, today we know, that the moon is still there. We're not fearing that the moon is lost or gone. We just know an eclipse is happening. An eclipse is going to happen from now. We know exact times, right? It's going to happen from this time to this time, and you can view it best at these places and so on, right? So it's that knowing that the light never goes away, that the light of God is with us no matter what the outer circumstances, no matter how dark things may seem to get. The light is always there. It's an internal lamp. It cannot go out. It's an allness of a lamp that cannot go out. And so it's remembering that in the light we can find the dark, and the dark can actually be a helper to find the exponential presence of the light and to shine it forth at its highest magnification. There's a great symbol, ancient symbol, that comes out of Taoism that really encapsulates this idea, right? It's the wholeness of us. It's the wholeness of life. It's the wholeness of spirit. That there is that circular idea, that holistic idea, and then there is light in the dark and dark in the light. It's the yin-yang, right? Yin is the dark, and yang is the light. Yin is the receptive, the darkness in the dark of night, right? And yang is the action, the sunlight, if you will, or the moonlight even, that shines out. And so it's the rest and the action. It's all of that opposition all together in one. So that image can remind us once again, whenever we're in a place where we think, oh, it's dark times, we're in dark times. Oh, but there's a spark of light there. And we can just easily, as in this curvature and this movement that is suggested by this symbol, move into the other side. Because it's all a part of the wholeness of who we are and what life is and what life on earth is intended to be. So even in trying times, we might learn then to detach from what our ego wants in order to let the divine light see its way through. The illumined soul knows that there is light in the dark, and the illumined soul also knows that we can unblock the light by our choice at any time. That we can, as we demask from whatever it is that we are overly identified with, we help ourselves allow that light to come forward. You know, there are so many roles and different ways we show up in the world, right? Neighbor or sibling or parent or child or whatever it is you do for a living, nurse or doctor or teacher and so on. And all of those are like the robes we wear, right? The masks we wear, the things that we take on. But when we are an illumined soul, we take that on, we wear those mantles with fullness and completeness, right? With everything we can bring to it, but with an understanding that it is not who we are. That who we are is that light. Who we are is that divinity that is shining through that mantle we have chosen to wear. Eckhart Tolle tells his story, I think it best illustrates this. He was a professor and he had this spiritual experience where he suddenly knew himself as divinity and only divinity, or light and only light. And he just like kind of lost all the roles that he had played, and he went out and he just like sat on a park bench for 2 years. He's just sort of beaming out the light on the park bench, I guess. Not sure exactly how that looked, but I'm sure it was beautiful, actually, and luminescent. But then there was a time when he consciously then, having let go of those old garbs, those old masks, knew it was time to take up a new mantle. And so he put on the mantle of spiritual leader and author. And knowing now, though, what he didn't know before is that he wasn't professor and that was who he was. He was now the light, who was taking on the role of spiritual leader, of spiritual author. Quite a different shift, isn't it? And so if we can remember to back up a little bit from all our identification with all these roles and responsibilities and status and ideas of who we are, then when one of those falls away, it's not devastating. Because we recognize that's not who I am. I am light. I am light. I am light. I hear you singing. And so we step into that knowing once again. You know, Gandhi knew this well, this idea of radiance, of being that light. He embodied that understanding, and he embodied the understanding of the roles not being important. Even though he was a leader for all of India, a spiritual leader, a political leader, you know, he had taken up the roles and identifications of attorney and activist and spiritual leader and all of these things, right? He had taken on the dress, the Western dress, when he was in South Africa and England and studying, and he had taken on the degrees of a very learned person, right? All of these things that we sort of add to ourselves over a lifetime. But the difference was, after he became more clear on his path as an illumined soul, that he didn't identify with any of that so much, only being the light as a vehicle, and these other things being the vehicle through which he expressed. So, for example, when he was called to England, he didn't put his Western dress back on when he was going to go visit with the king or tour around England. He wore a loincloth. You know, and just think about this, a sort of dignitary gathering, and there is Gandhi in a loincloth, and the rest of them are in all their regalia, right, of whatever forms of bling we might show up with, right, in a sort of statesman kind of gathering. And so it was that kind of true-to-self way of being that was a part of being a representative of the people, but also in a sense of oneness, but also being true to the self. And so we can examine for ourselves, where am I not so true to myself? Where am I wearing a mask or taking on a mantle that feels heavy? You know, it shouldn't feel heavy. If it feels heavy on our shoulders, burdensome on our shoulders, then maybe it's not the right thing for us. Or maybe we're taking it too seriously. And we've lost our sense of identification in that instead of in the light that we are. What is light? Light is not only a brightness, but it's also a lightness of being, right? It's not heavy. It's a lightness of being. It brings forth joy. It brings forth that kind of sense of knowing ourselves as spirit. It's fun. This kind of spiritual knowing makes life really fun. When we say at the end, have fun, spread joy, we ain't kidding. So, have you ever seen somebody when they're dying, how radiant? Have you ever, not everybody does this, but, and not everybody has the privilege of seeing somebody go through a dying process, but have you ever been witness to that radiance? Yeah, some of you have. And what is that? What is happening? It's that letting go, right? Letting go of the masks and the clothes that we've worn, the roles that we've put on, the robes or the mantles that we've gathered. It's a slow letting go of all of that and coming more and more to the truth of the light that we are. And we don't have to make our life transition to experience and to beam that kind of radiance. It's a consciousness shift. It's a recognition of who we are, a remembrance of who we are, and a disidentification with some of the outer stuff. Again, not that we don't take those things up with gusto. We just take them up with a knowing that it's not who we are. There's an important distinction in that. So unmasking, unblocking the light in this way is another way that the illumined soul walks upon this earth in its shiny, bright light. There can also be experimentation, right? As we experiment with different ways to light up. And as we do so, we might experience a more illumined body, for example, if we work with diet and nutrition or exercise, movement, tai chi, yoga, dance. Any of those things can begin to illumine the body in a different way. Or things of the heart, right? Chanting, singing, all different kinds of ways to express, to come into community with one another, to pray with each other. All of these things sort of illumine the heart. And then we illumine the mind through meditation and mantra, through reading sacred writings, sacred scriptures, reflecting upon these kinds of things. This illumines the mind. So it's fun to begin to experiment with those things that maybe you haven't done as much of or you'd like to go into a little deeper. Gandhi said that was the key, really, that it wasn't so much, in essence, he said it wasn't so much the getting there, but the journey, right? He said satisfaction lies in the effort, not the attainment. So all of these ways can contribute, right, to an illumined soul and help us expand that goodness out into the world. We could try the energy efficient approach. What could I do with the least amount of effort that could bring forth the greatest radiation of light? Try breathe in, breathe out. Or think of one thing you're grateful for. Or sit just for a moment, even a fraction of a moment of stillness. Feel the shift? That's a movement toward the light. That's a detachment from all the identifications and roles, and a movement to center, to remind ourselves again and again of who we are. So we can think of it in this way that I'm doing the energy efficient practices. I don't have to have 20 or 30 minutes out of my day to meditate. I'm doing it all day long in little energy efficient breaths. Breathing in, breathing out. Thinking of one thing I'm grateful for. Or sitting and pausing just for a moment of stillness. The lumen soul bows to the light. And by that I mean the lumen soul recognizes the entrusting that has been given over to us by Spirit to be the light of the world. See, a lot of people, when they come into New Thought, in the beginning they think, well, I can't believe those people. They think, you know, our second principle, I am, right? I am the light. I am the love. I am the truth. I am that I am. Those people, they think they're a bunch of little gods running around in charge of the world, right? But that is a misunderstanding, because in truth, it is that kind of fall to your knees, sort of bowing humility when we recognize the gift we have been given, the dominion we have been entrusted with since Genesis, since the beginning, to be the light, to remember that we are the light, to bring forth the light into the world, to help it heal, to help us transform, to help us remember. That's our charge. That's why we're here. And so it is all of these ways. And once we come into contact with that recognition, we remember again, there is a kind of bowing to the light. And what that is it's our ego, right? It's our ego bowing, saying, oh, I'm sorry. I got confused and thought I was in charge. I thought I was in control. And suddenly I am now recognizing I am in service. And so there's a stepping back and a recognition that there is a role for the ego, but it is to be of service. It is to follow the light. When we bow to the light, we become better followers of our guidance. We become better followers of the light. We listen more intently, and then we do what it is that we are guided to do. The illumined soul knows this. And then, of course, we just need to shine the light, right? Just like we just sang about a few minutes ago. As we become and remember and touch that light, even if it's in moments, it's then meant to be shined out. It's not something that is in limited supply, right? It's not like, oh no, I got the light, I got to keep the light, I got to keep it going, you know. None of that, right? It's just about sharing it, because the more that we share it, the more it ignites in the world, and the more that sense of luminescence all around us, our little boat of humanity and within us, becomes more visible to us, more known to us, more felt by us. Jesus put it this way. He said, no one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket. I can almost hear him saying, how ridiculous is that? Right? But on a lampstand, of course. And it gives light then to all in the house. And so in the same way, he says, let your light shine before others. You are the light of the world. He didn't say, I am the only light of the world. I am the special one. He said, you are the light of the world. And every one of our lights is needed. And all of our lights, as we shine them, begin to merge into that one big light that lights up the whole world. And suddenly, out of the dark, there's a luminescence, a delight, a mystical, magical experience. Because we've done the work, we've walked the path of the illumined soul. So there are some ways, let's summarize the ways that the illumined soul can light up the world. The first is finding light in the dark, right? Knowing the dark, embracing the dark, being okay with the dark, just recognizing, this is a part of that whole yin-yang. It's a part of the wholeness of who I am as a divine human being. And I can find the light in the dark. And then unblocking the light by unmasking our truest selves. Experimenting with illuminating practices. Bowing to the divine light. Letting the ego take that back seat and be a servant. So let then the light itself, the spirit, the divinity, the truth in us lead the way. And then finally, shining the light. And as we shine it, as Jesus told us, we become it. You are the light of the world. He says, shine your light, and then you are the light of the world. So fortunately, we don't have to be the whole light for the whole world. Isn't that a relief? As you know, just like in outrigger canoeing, it takes six people in a canoe, in a traditional outrigger canoe. It takes six to get that boat to really move together. And that is the key, is to move together. So every seat in the boat has a role. But the key is that each one not only does their role, but really the most important part is that you paddle in sync, that you switch over in sync, and that you're putting your paddles in at the same time, and you're taking your paddles out at the same time. And that's the practice, is the syncing up to paddle as one. If you think of the boat as the boat of humanity that we are all in, right? We all know the pandemic has affected some people much more than others. That, you know, all the isms of our world affect some people more than others, that the war going on right now affects some people more than others. But we're all in that one boat of humanity. And it takes all of us then to play our roles and to sync up our paddling so that we can paddle together as one. In an outrigger canoe, when you get everything together and it flows like that and it sinks like that, it just glides. It feels effortless. And you can tell when anybody's out of sync. You get a drag on the boat, right? And so that is our work, right? To learn not only what our role is and to step up and shine our own light, but to recognize it is not I alone that does this work. I am in the boat of humanity, and I must learn to paddle with my siblings. And so then we just learn, right? We keep paddling through. And soon we become more and more illumined ourselves in the process of the practice that we are up for, that we are doing together. So let's paddle together and become illumined souls, stirring the dark waters into light, paddling and gliding our boat of humanity to the new sunrise. Let's know this, let's be this together. We are illumined souls, and together we truly are lighting up the world. Let's say this together. We are illumined souls. Together we light up the world. And so it is.